Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we're the Love Letter Squad.
Yes, we are. And we welcome you to another Love Letters episode, another journey into the spirit of a wonderful man who's actually come back to do another letter with us. So I want to welcome Bruce. Bruce is back. And why don't you just start right in? You wanted to ask about,
well, The last love letter was to your wife, and we're very curious about if you can tell us what was her reaction. I think it was a surprise to her, right? She didn't know about it.
Yes, it was a surprise. And first of all, I'd like to thank you for asking me back. It's a great honor and a pleasure. And her and everyone who heard the love letter absolutely loved it.
I'm so glad.
And myself, you know, after hearing it on the air, I was very
pleased.
Wasn't
it wonderful? Yeah.
I was pleased with it.
Good.
It was exactly what I wanted to say.
Good.
So it was great.
And by the way, isn't that the whole point of a love letter? It should be exactly what you want to say.
Spontaneous. Not rehearsed, not planned, just spontaneous. And that's the way I wanted it to be, and it was.
Okay.
And
But you thought about everything you wanted to say.
Oh, yeah.
So it was planned in that way.
Oh, yeah. It was all planned.
Thought out.
I had always had it in my head. I just never
good.
Put it on paper.
Okay. So I'm so glad we're the ones that got you to do that. So today you are going to talk about the woman who raised you. And I know you had an interesting life, really filled with some challenges. Why don't you just start from as young as you can? And how did this woman come to be the one to raise you? And
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, as you said, I've had a very interesting life. My entire life has just been a continuous story, an epilogue of various things going on, such as having polio at the age of 5 and having to wear the leg braces that you do, for polio, and mm-hmm. putting up with the ridicule from others from wearing those leg braces and stuff. And, being raised in the South was a challenge. It was a very dramatic challenge for me because I didn't understand the hatred that was going on. I was one of 8 children in our immediate family with 2 cousins living with us, so there was 10 of us around. My mother was very sickly when we were growing up. My father was an oil field worker working offshore, so he was never around. And whenever I decided I would talk about Anna, I decided I'd go back into my memoirs and kind of read and figure out, when she first came into our life.
But and why did she come into your life?
Well, she came
was
into
to
our
help
life.
Your
well,
mother?
That was it. Was kind of like as I explained it, you'll see, mm-hmm. it was kind of like spontaneous. It wasn't something that had been planned.
Mm-hmm.
My father, working offshore in the Gulf, always had brought home seafood. We had seafood of every kind, and we lived the back of our house faced what used to be referred to as the quarters. That's where the black folks lived.
Mm-hmm.
In the town that we lived in, there were 2 sides of town. There was the west side of town, which was across the railroad tracks. That was where the quarters and where the people who were very poor lived.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the east side, and that was where the more influential white folks lived. And our first home was on the west side of town, and we lived there in that home, and really nice home, 2-story. We got to play a lot going up and down the stairs, and because we had so much seafood and stuff, even though we were very, very, very poor, we were on the government supplement program for food and stuff, my mother always taught us that there was always someone worse off than we were. So what we would do is when Father would come home and he would have all the seafood and we didn't have a place to store it because back then you're very limited to freezer stuff. And, well, she would say, why don't you kids take this and take it around the corner. Go back here to the quarters and see if you can give it to some folks. So we did, we'd do this quite often. We'd go out and pick blackberries and stuff and we'd have too much. We'd take that around there. So one Sunday morning, my mother had felt a little better, so she'd get out of the bed and stuff. And she dressed up, and instead of going to church, she decided, well, everybody's going to get dressed up. It's on Sunday morning, so we did. We all dressed up in our finest clothes. And then she goes into the kitchen, and she starts grabbing this food, and off we go into the quarters instead of church. She said, today, this is our church. This is where we're going to go. So we go down a block and a half, you know, and we start walking into the quarters. And, of course, all the black people are now getting off the road and standing on the sidewalks, the wooden sidewalks, and they're looking at this weird lady with these kids, this gaggle of kids behind her, in all these dress clothes, come walking down the street with these bags of groceries. Well, of course, they're kind of put off, you know, like, wow, what's going on? Then, all of a sudden, the house on the right-hand side, screened-in porch, the door opens up, and out comes this huge black lady. In my memoirs, I try to explain it as the biggest lady I've ever seen with the greatest smile you've ever imagined. And she comes out to the sidewalk edge, and she says, "Young lady, what are you doing here with all these children?" She says, "Well, I come to give food to you, you know." She says, "Well, you don't understand. Don't you find it dangerous?" I said, "No." She said, no, I'm here to do good, so everything be good." So that was Anna. That was the first time we met Anna. And, of course, now Anna looks at everybody else that's out there staring at us, and she says, asking what they're looking at, going about their business. So Mom gives her the bags of groceries, and we just basically socialized there on our front porch and met the lady. And Anna had told my mom, she says, "You know, we really love you for doing this, but you have to think of your children and yourself. You know, this is a time when white women were not allowed to even be, you know, over there, more or less, doing what she was doing." And my mom's deal was, "God wants me to do what I'm going to do, I'm going to do it." So this went on several times. After that date, we visited there several times, giving food out and everything. So then on a Friday, I'll never forget it, for some reason I was home, and it was on a Friday, and I heard a knock at the front door, and I look up, and there's Miss Anna standing there with this young boy at her side.
And how old were you at this time?
Oh, my goodness. I knew you were going to ask me. I was young. I had to be about 6 years old. Not quite six, because I hadn't gone to first grade yet. So I was probably about 5.5 years of age. Mm-hmm. Still wore the leg braces and stuff from polio. So she'd come to the front door, you know, and I'd go up there and I'd let her in. And she had acted like she was supposed to be there. She comes in. And she asked me where my mom was. I told her, you know, I took her to mom's bedroom, and she said, "Miss Yula, I'm here to work."
Oh, my.
And mom said, "What do you mean, to work?" She says, I've come to work. You know, it's my right to have to work. I'm going to work for you." So she just went into the kitchen and started cleaning up. And from that day forward, it was just a matter of she just showed up every day.
So when you say she raised you, she did it in that way that she was there all the time.
Yes, she was always there.
But it's not like your mom passed away.
No, my mom was alive.
Okay.
And my mother just was so very sickly, she couldn't be out of the bed.
Oh.
So Anna would take us to church. She would take us, and that in the South was challenging, you know. It was very challenging. And then the marvelous thing is her son, Sonny, not say that a thousand times, her son, Sonny, became one of my best friends.
Sure.
Even though he was younger than I was, he and I really became close. And we did everything together. You know, we fished. And we finally wound up going to school together. And it was because of this relationship that my family wound up having a lot of turmoil. We were having crosses burnt in our front yard, and we were, you know, getting in fights and stuff like this because the people didn't want that to happen. And my mother's response was, "It's okay. It's okay."
Oh, good for her. But I have a question just for our listeners. You're saying you were six. Can you just tell us what year this was, just so historically people can know? Sorry about that.
Okay, no, that's all right.
You're not shy.
I just got to count ahead, you know. I was born in 1949, so if you put that together.
Okay, so that was like, yes.
1955.
Okay, so that's important to know for this story.
Yeah, well, the marvelous thing about this is, for historians, you know, the riots in Selma, Alabama, and all that was going on at that time in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, the greatest event of my life was Anna and my mother and us standing on the street corner on the east side of town by the bank one morning, and all of a sudden a bus pulls up and out walked these white men in black suits and black hats and stuff. And the first thing you know, they start going to all the black people mm-hmm. and saying, get on the bus, get on the bus. Here's $10, get on the bus. Get on the bus. We'll pay you $10 to get on the bus.
Where was the bus going?
I didn't know at the moment. But then all the black people says, no, mister, we don't do that here. You go away. We're happy here. Go away and leave us alone. It was the bus that they were hiring to take people to Alabama to protest. They were paying them to go protest and stuff. And, you know, they didn't want that. They didn't want the turmoil mm-hmm. and stuff. So I was put off by it. I was really confused at that time because I grew up with love, and I didn't understand it. I saw the hatred in our town, but mm-hmm. I didn't realize it extended that far. You know, at 6 years old, you're kind of wondering.
Sure.
So that was one thing I really loved about Anna. Even though my mother taught me love and compassion, Anna taught me understanding. I would see all of the anger and all of the beatings and all of the bad stuff that would go on with her and the other black people there. And she would always tell me, this is part of learning. This is part for society to learn. We don't take it personal.
She sounds like a brilliant woman.
She was a wonderful, wonderful, good-hearted lady.
So now how many children did she have?
She only had Sonny.
Oh.
She had Sonny, and her mother lived with her. When I first met her, her mother was this very fragile old lady.
So you went all through your adolescence with Sonny? And
oh, yeah.
Now,
oh, yeah.
What's become of, where's Sonny now?
Sonny's living in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and he's an attorney.
Oh, how nice.
He made it.
That's great.
He made it. I was so proud of him that he made it. For someone of that generation to make it was really
You talk
really
to him now and again?
I, you know, I haven't, I'm very bad. I haven't in the last 10 years or so.
Yes.
Even more than that, it's probably been 20 years since I came back from Vietnam and stuff. I kind of lost track of everybody.
Uh-huh.
But I do know he's still there because I went back for my father's funeral and I got to see him then.
So there's no statute of limitations on sending a letter to someone you love. Even if time has gone by, it'll be a sweeter gift for it probably.
Well, that's the thing is I kind of think by doing it to her and sending it to Sonny
mm-hmm.
that he'll understand that that's history, that we have something to say even though we're older now,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it.
That's exactly what we say, Bruce.
Let
me just take this moment to remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time. Hope you'll join us.
So I'm going to ask you who gets the love letter today.
Sonny's going to get it. Anna has passed away.
You called her Anna?
Ago. Her name was Anna Marie Wilson, and we always called her Auntie Anna. And Auntie Anna will always be that to me.
But here's my question. So you're going to write it to Auntie Anna, but you're going to mail it to Sonny.
I got to mail
that
it
what
to Sonny.
Okay.
That's her son. And
so,
I want him to read it.
Exactly.
You know?
That's
and
such a nice double duty for a love letter.
Yeah. You know, when we were growing up, I kind of felt like at times I would, because she would always pay attention to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Sonny was there, but Sonny wasn't being paid attention to. And I thought that there was going to be kind of a little hardship there that, oh, wow, she's taking on this new kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's not paying attention to me. But he never did that. I'm going to start crying. He never did that. He always like, oh, okay, it's okay, come on, we're brothers, you know.
Well, that might have been a real treat for him to have a brother because
it was,
if he was an only child.
Well, I found out later on, especially in high school when we both played football, and for the listeners, I'll get a little personal. I got kicked out of school because of that. My junior year was the first year that they integrated the schools down there. And before the black kids were allowed to come to school, they had sent out a memorandum to everyone
mm-hmm.
that no matter what, if any altercations arise between a white student and one of the black students coming in, the white student will be expelled, no questions asked. Well, because Sonny and I were great friends, because we went to school together, because we hung out together, I got in fights constantly with everybody because they would always try to pick on him and I would take up for him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they brought in three children, black kids, two guys and a girl, to integrate. And when they saw Sonny and I, the two guys saw Sonny and I as best friends, they automatically kind of shunned away. They didn't want to have anything to do with me and kind of pulled away. And we were in football practice one afternoon, and Sonny played and I played on the A string. And one of the new black guys, they introduced him. He came in, and he played against us on a scrimmage. And the next thing I know is he's into it with me. And I'm trying to get away and not say anything because I don't want to get in trouble. And we wound up getting in an altercation. Well, of course, they expelled me. Well, now Sonny's on his own in high school. He has nobody to take up for him.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, that's when I had to leave to go to Vietnam, and
that's when I lost track. Okay, well, let's talk about, and I know last time you brought that beautiful letter that you'd already written, and this time we're going to write it here.
Right.
Which, and I like both those things on this show, don't you, Teresa?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Because either way, people get to see how a really good love letter can be started and what it can include. And so I think, excuse me, if you're writing it to Anna, you might want to start out by saying something like, it's been so many years since we stood in the same kitchen, you know, just to put it in time. And then to say right out, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to Sonny, my old best friend?
My best brother.
My best brother.
My closest brother. He was he was the brother that I wanted at that time because I was surrounded by sisters.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And
so he was your only brother.
He was my only brother at that time, but then I had two younger brothers after that. They grew up. And I would like to start it out. You know, I thought about how to start it out and what I really wanted to say to her,
Anna.
Yes.
Anna. What?
Here we are, 40 years down the road, and yet the love that you showed me and all the knowledge that you gave me has never been faded. It's never faded away. It's only helped me completely through my entire life. Always remember to be loving and caring of other people, and don't let hatred rule your life. And I thank you for that, you know, and I'll take it to my grave and try to teach other people the same.
So say that again. You taught me to...
to love and to let go of anger and to just forgive people and try to understand people. I guess that's... You know, Martin Luther King was a great man, you know, as in my eyes. And if Anna could have been there, she would have been right beside Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
She was always, don't fight, love instead of fighting, you know. Let God be in your heart and just go for it. I listened to my friend yesterday on your show, Craig,
mm-hmm.
and he had made a statement that something about being macho. He didn't want to say certain things because he wanted...
Mm-hmm.
Men have a tendency to do that, you know, and we try to hide our feelings. Whereas I've learned that any man out there listening to this that thinks they can't do a love letter because it's too mushy or it's too gimpy or whatever you want to say, I challenge them because it's harder. It's harder to put your feelings out there for everyone to hear.
That's right.
Than it is to put it inside and to pretend that you're strong and all this.
Being mushy isn't for sissies.
No, it's not.
Uh-uh.
It's not. You have to be able to get out there and fight for what you know is right in your heart and to put it out there so people can understand, whether it's the loved ones that you have and you tell them every single day, I love you and I care for you, or you go on the air like this and you tell the nation, I love you.
But there's something about having it on paper that you can take it out anytime you
That's
want
right.
and read it. You don't
That's
have
exactly.
to
exactly. It's a reminder.
Yes. So what else would you like to tell her that Sonny might like to know, you know? I mean, that's kind of an art, doing a double duty like that.
Yeah, that's true.
You
that's
know?
True. Well, I hope when Sonny gets the letter and mm-hmm. he reads it, that he understands all the time.
Let's say that. Let's just put that on the paper.
Yeah, well,
whatever it is that I hope when Sonny gets this letter.
Well, Sonny, when you read this letter, I want you to understand that at that time and place, your mother was the most brave lady I ever knew in my life. Not only did she stand up in the face of the black people who kept threatening her and warning her not to socialize with the white people, and she had enough love and heart and faith in God that she went forward. And it, had it not been for people like your mother, the world wouldn't be as good as it is today. Mm-hmm. If everybody had taken the back seat the way that they were told and shut up the way they were told, we would probably be in that same predicament today. Mm-hmm. Whereas look at the freedom that she gave. Mm-hmm. And be proud of her, as I am. Be proud of what she stood for.
So you're going to say, I hope when Sonny gets this, that he'll know how proud he should be.
That's right. Every single day.
He probably does know. Do you think he does?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
he does.
Of course.
She raised him.
Yeah, so
that way. Yeah, no, she's... there were two angels in my life, and that was my mother and Anna. And, you know, I just want to take a brief second. I'm not going to go off on a tangent, but I do want to also say that if it hadn't have been for the other lady I told you about, Dottie.
Yeah,
who saved me from my father. Between the three women in my life, mm-hmm. I would not have come out the person I am today.
So, you know, now Dottie saved you from... your dad's brutality?
Physically. Uh-huh. She hit me. I don't know if I mentioned this in your last program or not.
Well, I think you did say something about it, but who can we write to about Dottie?
Well, that's unfortunate that there's no one, because
is that right?
She's passed away. The the House of Ill Repute that she mm-hmm. ran mm-hmm. is no longer. All the history is gone from her except the memories. But I will personally write a letter, and I'm going to take it to the ocean where I live the best. That's what I did for my mother when she passed away. I took it all to the ocean, and I asked them, watch what I do. I surf, so yeah. Watch what I do. And this
I have another thought, though. I mean, that's a lovely thing to do. And I have another thought. The House of Ill Repute was in what town?
Vinton, Louisiana.
So, I don't know. I'm getting kind of big on sending letters to places. In other words, to still do a love letter to Dottie, say who she was. You're such a good writer. I mean, you don't need me to
thank you.
Assist you here. But to write a letter to Dottie and then send it to City Hall or the Vinton newspaper.
There you go.
And see
very
if they'll
good.
Publish it.
That would be wonderful.
And let that get out to anyone who would remember her.
There you go. That's a very great idea.
Could you do that?
I will do that. I actually went online the other day and found out a lot of information about the town of Vinton, because it was destroyed in Katrina and stuff. But they do still have some of the records and stuff, and I would love to do that. To bring
yes,
back
whatever the newspaper is, to the publisher.
I don't even know. It's such a small town. No, they have a newspaper. All that's that.
They'll have something.
Yeah.
Or they'll have a town government. They'll have a mayor.
Yeah. No, I'll take it to the city hall.
And
send it to
them. If it's small enough, maybe they just even post it for you.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. She deserved it.
That's why.
Because here again was a young lady. You're talking about the early 50s, or you know, and
it's a hard
back
time
then,
to be brave.
Women didn't have the right to do most anything, and just like Anna and sticking up for her beliefs, and my mother sticking up for her religious beliefs and mm-hmm. her children, Dottie. Even though she was a madam, she was a lady. She mm-hmm. was a true lady. And she stood up to let people know that, okay, yeah, this is what I do, but you know what? I'm proud of what I do. And I'm proud of who I take care of. And I honor her for that.
All that on the paper, right?
Yeah.
You've got that in your heart and head, so you'll...
Yeah. I've got it in my memoirs, so
Okay. I think, turning that into a letter...
Perfect. Right. I would just, going back to your letter to your Auntie Anna, and you know that it's going to Sonny instead, some of the things that you said, beautiful, they're kind of general. Would there be a specific situation that maybe Sonny might have forgotten about, the two of you, when maybe the two of you got into a scuffle and Anna was the referee or some situation that he would really...
The only time I ever saw his mother get angry, so to say, was I was going to a parochial school at that time. I was when I did go to school, I went from the first to the eighth grade at the St. Joseph Catholic School there in Vinton. And one day, she had sent Sonny to bring me my lunch that I had forgotten. And he came to the class, and he stood outside the door. And I'm not going to... They were very rude to him, put it that way.
Well, you can put it in here.
They were very rude to him. So he set the lunch down, and he left. And I guess he must have gone home and told Anna, because it was funny. All the windows to the school faced the road, and all you could see was this big black lady on the east side of town, in the white section of town, walking right down the middle of the road, coming up to the classes, looking in every window, sees me in the class, then walks around to the door, and without stopping, which was taboo at that, without stopping, walked right in to the nun. The lunch was still sitting on her desk. Reaches up, grabs the lunch, brings it over to me, mm-hmm. gives it to me, then goes back to the nun and says, "You never treat my children like that again." Walked out.
God bless. Okay, so that goes. So you remind Sonny that you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to give this to you just for notes, just so some of the things you said are down there for you to go from.
Right. Well, we're nearly out of time. Thank you again, Bruce. And you can come back anytime with your fabulous stories.
Thank you.
Because we hear you have a carnival life, too.
Right.
Oh, I've got
another time.
Another time. So to our listeners, for now, we want to thank you for joining us. We hope you'll tune in every week at this time. If you want to go to our website, you can learn more about what we do, the Love Letter Squad.
And what we can offer you.
Mm-hmm.
To help you write those love letters that you may have lurking in your heart. Or if you just want to try your hand at it for the joy of it.
Right. You can listen to all our past programs as well.
Yes.
So that address is www.lovelettersquad.com.
Now, may I spell it?
Yeah, absolutely.
www, that part's easy, LoveLetterSquad.com. And the reason I spell it is because this whole world of internet is so unforgiving, and if you hit one wrong letter, we'll never know you're there.
Yeah. So, Janet, what do we always say as we sign off?
Well, one of the things we say, we've developed so many things we say, but one of the things we say is that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
And we hope you'll put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Yes.
So until next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye for now.
Bye. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.